Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Nintzel, the editor of the Tucson Weekly and other Tucson local media publications, and I am your host for Zona Politics. Today, we are going to be talking with state lawmaker Kirsten Engel, who is in her second term at the Arizona Legislature, representing Midtown Tucson in Legislative District 10. And welcome to Zona Politics, Representative Engel.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So the session, just for our listeners who may not be totally tied up into what goes on at the Arizona Legislature, your session starts at in January. It's supposed to run for 100 days, often runs longer, and I think you've passed that 100-day mark at this point. So where are things? It seems
almost,
like a lot of legislation has moved through the process, but we haven't heard much about the budget outside of Governor Ducey's proposal.
Yes, it's been a bit of a curious session, I have to say, and we're not done yet. The committee process has concluded, but there's still a lot of bills that are still up for final votes and debate in both houses. So, and from what we understand, the Republicans have, they're still trying to hash out their position on the budget. There's been some back and forth with the Democrats, not a whole lot. So we've got a ways to go, unfortunately.
And let me ask you, Governor Ducey unveiled his budget at the start of the session. And what did you think of that proposal?
Well, there were things in it that, that I liked. He's continuing the 2020 plan. That's good. We would of course like more funding in there for education. He does have chunks of money for higher education for the universities. However, we would like ongoing money. There's some good things about the governor's budget. Certainly a something to discuss and work on. So. What we thought was a work in progress and a good start.
One thing that seemed to create some bad blood between Governor Ducey and legislative Republicans was this question of conformity between the federal tax laws and the state tax laws after the Trump tax cuts. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this, but essentially because of those changes, the state expected to collect more income tax revenue, and GOP lawmakers wanted to send that back to the taxpayers, whereas the governor vetoed some legislation that would have done that. Instead, wants to put the money in the rainy day fund. And I've heard Republicans still want some kind of tax rebate as part of the budget negotiations. Can you give us any insight into what's happening there?
Right. I think that has still been a real stickler in budget discussions within the Republican Party. So, some of the House Republicans apparently really are pushing for returning some of that money from the tax conformity back to the taxpayers. But if you look at all the needs in our state, needs that, the Republicans are on board with, too, which is, they've really pushed hard to put money into the rainy day fund so that if we do meet an economic downturn in the next few years, we'll have some money stashed away. But the Democrats, we see the logic in that. I think there's a difference in how much money we would want to put away. But, there are just really important pressing needs right now. And so we don't think that this is time for a tax cut. We think that conformity money, to the extent there, would be much better used helping the schools, helping in affordable real dividends to the citizens.
And Senate President Karen Fann has said she wants to craft a true Senate bipartisan budget with input from members of both parties, perhaps a budget that isn't liberal enough for some Democrats or conservative enough for some Republicans. Do you see that as something that's feasible in today's legislature?
Well, I think it might be. And I applaud Senator Fan for putting that out there and saying that she would work across the aisle on a budget. And my understanding is that's the way the things used to be done. But for the past few years, we've been seeing these, Republican budgets where they basically huddle in a room, come up with a budget, and then just pass it on a party line vote. And, I don't think that serves the people very well. In the House, it's 29 Democrats to 31, so it's almost 50-50. So, we're kind of sick of those, that kind of way of doing things, and would like a more bipartisan process.
And last year, we saw the Red for Ed movement up in the streets at the Capitol. What's happening on the education front this year? Are teachers going to see those raises they were promised, you think?
Well, one of the big pushes now is for money for, educators that would not be traditionally considered to be teachers under the governor's 2020 plan. And I think that was an ask of the Red for Ed movement that we were not able to get was money for the school counselors, for those reading teachers, for the bus drivers, for the cafeteria workers. I mean, all of the people in a school system that make that school work and serve those students. So that's one of the big issues in education. I think we'd also very much like to push ahead. There's a plan out there for getting basically the soft capital funding. It's called district additional assistance. And it was cut by, over the past decade, almost $400 million. And we would like to accelerate returning that money to the school.
And there was a bill that will allow Dreamers to pay a reduced tuition rate that has stalled in the Senate. And talk a little bit about that legislation.
Well, that's a really interesting bill that was introduced by Senator Carter. She's a Republican, has always been a strong advocate for education. And we were pretty excited about that. That bill had troubles in the House, and so it became a strike everything to a different bill in the Senate. Maybe I got that a little confused. I guess the problems it was having was in the Senate, and it would have created a sort of new tier of tuition. The Arizona Supreme Court has ruled that Dreamers are not eligible for in-state tuition because of a proposition that was passed by the voters in the year 2000. So they are subject to paying out-of-state tuition, which, as you may know, is just, it's much more than in-state tuition. It can be double the amount. So she would have created a residential tuition. And under her bill, and this would have been something that anyone who basically graduated from an Arizona high school, who was at least in high school, I think, for 2 years and graduated from that high school, they would be eligible for what's known as a residential tuition rate. And this would be something in between in-state tuition and out-of-state tuition. And it would apply to the Dreamers, but it would also apply to other people who maybe had just moved back into the state, but had actually gone to high school here earlier. So there were a lot of people that would benefit from that. The latest I've heard is it's not going anywhere right now, which is really a shame. I mean, even the Arizona Chamber of Commerce came out, and so it did have pretty wide appeal.
And if you're just tuning in, I'm Jim Nintzel, your host for Zona Politics, and we're talking with Rep. Kirsten Engel of Tucson about what's going on at the state legislature right now. This week, lawmakers sent two bills that would essentially ban texting while driving to the governor's desk. And what's the difference between these bills and what would be prohibited, essentially?
So under the bill that passed with a very large margin, Representative Campbell's bill, Arizona would join 44 other states that have banned texting while driving. So this would mean you can only have basically a hands-free device in the car while you're driving. So you wouldn't, besides basically turning it on, you would be prohibited from holding it, putting it on your shoulder, texting, making phone calls through the phone.
You can still use your navigation, I assume.
Sure, you can use your navigation, you can use your hands-free device, you can use anything like that. You could use a, you know, you can press and tap a screen in your car. You just can't be looking down at your phone.
Got it.
So it was a very emotional day. The family of the, I think it's Sergeant Townsend, who was killed this past January by somebody who was texting and driving. They were there. I know that they were very personally involved in really pushing the legislature to act, because this issue has been before the legislature for years. Senator Steve Farley has always been a big advocate of this. He introduced these bills every single year, and they've really gotten nowhere until this year. So we finally had Republican support for this, and it became a real bipartisan win, I think.
What was the second bill?
Yeah, the second bill was introduced by Senator Mesnard. And, you know, this is just a sort of, it's a prohibition against distracted driving. And, you know, it sounds good on the outside. We certainly don't want to have people driving distracted. But the bill was so vaguely worded, we had some real concerns about it, you know, it just being too subjective, and certainly concerns about racial profiling were raised. So an officer could, you know, stop anyone who is somehow exhibiting something that is considered to be distracted driving, and find them. So that was passed only on a party line vote.
And we're taping this on Thursday. The show doesn't air till Sunday, so we'll see what Governor Ducey does with these bills, if anything.
Right.
Let me, as long as we're talking about criminal new laws and potential racial profiling and whatnot, let me ask you about criminal justice reform. You know, at the start of the session, I spoke with some folks down here active in that movement, and they seemed very hopeful that there might actually be some movement on that front. But it sounds like they're going to be disappointed for another session.
Well, unfortunately, they are. We all started very hopeful this year on that topic. We had several bills that were being introduced by Republicans, and we thought that we had enough support. And I do think that there's a lot of support in the membership as a whole on both sides. But what we've been up against is the chair in both the House and the Senate have generally not been willing to hear the bills. So we've only had a couple bills that have been heard in the House, and those bills have not even been heard in the Senate. So it's been very frustrating. Some of these bills, we're still not quite sure what their fate will be. One of the ones that has been, you know, probably front and center on this topic has been bills over inmates earning what's known as earned release credits. And these are basically, you know, good time, good behavior credits, which would enable them to get out of jail, out of prison earlier. And we have two bills that were introduced, one by Representative Blackmun, a Republican, that was a bill that many of us supported because it applied to a large number of inmates, and it seemed to be a very feasible bill for enabling them to reduce their prison sentence. And Arizona has the fourth highest incarceration rate in the United States and some of the longest sentences, especially for drug offenses. But on the other hand, we had a much, much, much weaker bill proposed by Representative Farnsworth, 1310. And that is the bill that they've chosen to push forward with. But our concerns about that bill is it cannot be promising, and it doesn't promise much. And so we really like the more aggressive bill by Representative Blackmun, but so far that hasn't gotten a hearing.
And as long as we're talking about criminal justice reform, and of course this weekend is 420, marijuana advocates are wondering, are there any movement on any sort of reform of Arizona's marijuana, medical marijuana program this session?
Well, no, there was a bill this week dealing with taxing of medical marijuana. And it was a bill by Senator Borelli that had to do with enabling the Department of Health Services to share information with the Department of Revenue to make sure that dispensaries are turning in all of the tax dollars that they should be under our state tax laws. And that bill, I'm not quite sure exactly what the case was, but that bill also was put up requiring a supermajority, and it went up twice and did not get that number. It would have passed if it only needed a majority, but they wanted the bill to be effective this year, and they just didn't have the votes for that supermajority. So that's really the only thing that's really happened in the medical marijuana area. There is that case that's pending before the Arizona Supreme Court. Dealing with whether concentrates are included within the medical marijuana laws,
which is a big question because a lot of the business has moved into these concentrates and extracts.
That's right, and that is, there was an effort in the Arizona House. Representative Fries had an amendment to that same Borelli bill to make it clear that concentrates are included and are considered medical marijuana, to make that clear. But that unfortunately to me, that was not, that amendment did not make it onto the bill. So we're really just waiting to see what the Supreme Court does.
And if you're just tuning in, I'm your host, Jim Nintzel. This is Zona Politics, and we're talking with Rep. Kirsten Engel of Tucson about what's going on up at the Arizona legislature. And Pima County got a win with a bill that would allow them to ask voters to increase the current half-cent Regional Transportation Authority sales tax to a full cent and use some of those dollars for road maintenance rather than expansion of roads, which is what we have now. And you supported this legislation.
I did support it. You know, I thought that was an option that should be available, and it seemed like there was still enough procedures in the hoops that still need to be gone through where the public can have a say in that. So I didn't feel like that possible. But that any kind of increase still has to go to the voters, and there still has to be a clear plan, a regional transportation plan that would also get the input for voters. So I think those steps are really going to be important, and I hope people pay attention to it. And I think what the legislature did is it made it possible to go to those next steps.
And the Regional Transportation Authority, of course, approved by voters. The tax was approved by voters way back in 2006. So that's coming up for a 20-year renewal. So this allows them to get into that process and possibly change up the plan and see what the community wants. It appears that this proposal to allow businesses to pay some workers less than the minimum wage isn't going anywhere.
Well, thank goodness for that, Jim. I was very adamantly opposed to that. I think work is work. Our young people need the money for going to school and supporting their growing families. And, you know, it doesn't make sense to me that somehow if you're under age 22, you're going to make a different minimum wage. It also seems to fly in the face of the voter initiative we just passed in 2016 to raise the minimum wage. So unconstitutional and bad policy as far as I was concerned.
And, you know, we're hearing a lot about measles outbreaks these days, and Governor Ducey has called Arizona a pro-vaccination state. But we are seeing a lot of parents using this personal belief exemption that allows them to send their kids to school without having them vaccinated. What's going on with any vaccination legislation this year?
Well, I really appreciate the governor speaking out about that. And I think that slowed down several bills that were being heard in the Arizona House Health Committee, overseen by Representative Bardo, that would have weakened our immunization laws, and I think really burdened health providers in providing information that really is not something that is necessary, and really might scare people off from vaccinating their children. So Arizona does have this very broad exemption that, you know, if you have a personal belief against immunizing your child, you don't have to do so. And personally, I think that that's too broad. You know, we do also have an exemption for, you know, a medical reason that seems to be supportable. But having a personal belief, that's a real concern, because there's just no limits on that. And we've been seeing these outbreaks of measles in the United States. And if you get down too low, you lose what's known as herd immunity that you need to really protect people from, once you have a single case, from it really spreading throughout a population.
We had Governor Ducey recently sign a bill that allows Arizona to recognize occupational license from people that have taken the training in other states. What did you think of this bill?
Well, I also had concerns about those bills. This seems to be part of an agenda to really kind of eliminate some of the boards and regulatory authorities that we have, and licensing authorities. You know, the mantra is that, you know, these boards are imposing unnecessary regulation, you know, but the other side of the coin is that, you know, they're protecting the consumers. And, you know, and these are, they're enforcing the licensing laws that we've passed here in Arizona. So, I don't know much about the licensing laws in other states. You know, do they actually look into people's backgrounds? Do they make sure that they're trained and qualified to carry out, you know, the profession that they're seeking a license for? I don't know. So I just was not comfortable with saying that anyone who has a license from another state can come into Arizona and practice in our state without having to get some kind of sign off by our licensing authorities. So I was against that. You know, obviously maybe there's some improvements that we could do, but I thought that was just, that wasn't something that I could support at this point.
The governor also signed a bill allowing people to cut and style hair without a license, and I think you also voted against that one.
I did as well. And, you know, we had a lot of people in the cosmetics industry that were opposed to that bill. There was an excellent amendment that had been worked out that was going to be offered by Representative Pam Powers Hanley that would have authorized students who have done something like 100 hours of training to be able to do the things that bill is covering, you know, I think it's, you know, style, hair, I think that would have been a good compromise, and those trainees would have had some oversight, but the bill that was passed, just sort of the legislature is coming up with its own rules, that there's certain things that you don't need oversight by the Board of Cosmetology for, you know, I'm uncomfortable with that. It's sort of a buyer beware mentality. And, you know, we heard enough stories about, you know, issues of sanitation and health that, you know, I think that's still something that needs some oversight by our Board of Cosmetology. It should just not be exempted from it.
You know, my 5-year-old tried to cut my 2-year-old's hair, and I think she probably could have used a little more training for sure. Let me ask you one final question in the minute or so we have remaining, and that is, the legislature acted swiftly to repeal the so-called no-promo-homo law in recent weeks. Well, what was this law all about, and why did lawmakers take it off the books so quickly?
Well, this has just been an embarrassment for years, that in our state statute, it says that in any kind of sex education class that's offered in a school, and you may know that in Arizona, parents must opt in to have their children in a sex education class. I think it really should be an opt-out. But in any case, in such classes, there shall be no promotion of a homosexual lifestyle. And, you know, the problem with this is that this took away any kind of discussion of safe sex practices for gay and lesbian couples. This took away discussion of homosexuality, and it really, I think, has had a lot of harm. We heard a lot of stories of actually gay members in the legislature who felt that that was the first time they really appeared different to their peers and were set apart and were considered somehow inferior. So this is something that's been part of the agenda of the LGBTQ community to get rid of this. And there was an opportunity by the fact that the law was challenged in court, and the state attorney general said that he was not willing to defend the law. So I think, you know, it was quite clear that this was not a good law. It was not even defensible. And so it was time to get rid of it. So that was, again, that was a nice bipartisan moment when the parties came together to repeal that law.
Well, let's hope we have more of those before the end of the session. We are out of time. My guest today, Rep. Kirsten Angle, talking about what's going on at the Arizona Legislature. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Really enjoyed it.
And that's Zona Politics for this week. I'm Jim Nintzel, your host here on KXCI 91.3 FM Community Radio, and we will be back next week.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org.